Our first case for argument, Craig v. Ontario Corporation, Mr. Richmond.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rick Richmond. I represent the appellant, Ontario Corporation, in these consolidated appeals. I will address first the jurisdictional issue raised by Ontario's motion for relief from judgment, which the district court determined it was without jurisdiction to even review. The district court denied the motion for relief not on the merits, but based on its conclusion that due to the pending appeal from the district court's grant of summary judgment in favor of the plaintiffs, Craig, that it was without jurisdiction to even review the motion for relief.
Now, assuming for the moment that you were entitled to bring this, you certainly were also entitled to raise the jurisdictional issue with this court. And as you know, sometimes the Supreme Court even discovers subject matter jurisdiction problems that no one else has mentioned before.
The trouble being, of course, that we asked the court to make a finding that it needed to conduct an evidentiary review, and my...
No, I understand that, but you could have said to this court, there's no subject matter jurisdiction under 1332, presented the same things you presented to try to persuade the district court that there was a need for a hearing, and we either could remand for a hearing or we might say something else. You know.
And
it's
I guess
hard for me to see what's the difference between the arguments that you would initially present to the district court and those you could present here.
I don't think there is any difference, Your Honor. I could present those arguments here, and in fact, I am presenting those arguments here.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I believe that the best thing to do was to fully develop the facts. My reading was that the district court is better set to hold evidentiary hearings on matters like that, and the court had the ability to make a finding that it would like to do that, in which case, as you know, under Boyko, the appellant, our client, could then ask this court for a limited remand to allow
right.
the district court to do that.
Right.
And so that's the avenue we took. The district court, again, found that it was out of jurisdiction to do so, which I think is clearly wrong, Your Honor. And so Your Honor's directed me to file a second appeal, and we are here on that appeal. Again, under Boyko, the district court had a specific, and I quote, specific implementing duty to review any Rule 60B motion filed during the pendency of an appeal. The court did not do so in this case. Your Honor, the Craigs alleged in their complaint that they were residents, not citizens, but residents of Arizona, an allegation that Ontario lacked sufficient information to admit or deny, but we had no reason to dispute it at that time.
However, seems to me they might still be saying that. They've appended to their brief some affidavits, Exhibit A and Exhibit B, and they're phrased in a very interesting way. Paragraph 1 of each affidavit says, Charles or Barbara, I am a United States citizen and resident of the state of Arizona. I don't see where that says you're a citizen of Arizona.
I'm sorry?
It says, I am a United States citizen and resident of the state of Arizona. It depends whether that's citizen and resident of the state of Arizona or it's United States citizen and resident of the state of Arizona.
Your Honor, it's another example of the same defect that's in the complaint itself. The complaint itself did not allege even citizenship. It alleged residency.
Right.
And I know that in their response brief, the Craigs tried to argue that, we did have a form of proof, if you will, in the form of the affidavits you just referred to, but those are defective for the exact same reason, Your Honor. They do not allege, and even if they did, it would be completely conclusory, Your Honor, but they don't even allege, in fact, there is citizenship of these plaintiffs, now appellees, in Arizona.
I should know this and I apologize, but when you came forward with your request for the district court to hold the hearing and you said, for example, that in April 2005 the Craigs got the Indiana Homestead tax credit, did you support this by anything you were proffering to the court or did you just say so?
No, we attached copies of those documents,
okay.
Your Honor.
Yeah, so you did have a proffer, essentially.
We did.
Yeah.
And the Craigs, though, raised that we did not support our motion with certified copies, for example, or affidavits. And again, as we point out, Your Honor, I think that puts the shoe on the wrong foot about who has the burden here. The law is very clear that the court presumes that it has no jurisdiction. And it's once the issue is raised, the burden is on the plaintiff, the non-movement, to establish by affidavits or other evidence the existence of diversity jurisdiction. In this case, as you note, as you will note, when the Craigs responded to our motion, they did not dispute at that time, and they have not disputed before this court, that all the facts alleged in the motion for relief are true. They are undisputed. They themselves, in their response, did not support their affidavit. Their response is not verified. It's not supported by affidavit, and none of the documents that they attached are themselves documents which were verified, you know, certified copies. So, again, it was not our burden, Your Honor. Clearly, the facts that we brought forward, which are undisputed, do raise a question, clearly raise a question about whether or not the Craigs were, in fact, citizens of Arizona at the time they filed their complaint.
Right.
Based upon that, I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I was going to say, you can certainly finish up this thought, but I did have one question for you in the event we were to reach the merits.
I'm sorry?
I had one question for you. Finish your thought on jurisdiction if you want, but I wanted to ask you.
No, Your Honor, please go ahead.
Okay. My basic question there is that there seems to be state law on one side, state law on the other side. What's wrong with reducing to judgment a claim like the one the Craigs has, as long as the Craigs have, as long as actual collection on the judgment follows the priorities? No one's paying anything, no one's doing anything, as long as actual collection on the judgment follows the priorities specified in the notes.
Well, Your Honor, this obviously is addressed to the second issue, the issue on the underlying matter.
Right. That's what I said.
Your Honor, the whole matter is, if you know, the Craigs didn't just sue to recover for the payments that my client had not made. But on the basis that there had been a default under the notes, an event of default, they purported to accelerate the entire unpaid balance, plus interest, plus attorney fees, and reduce that to judgment. And, Your Honor, the issue is when somebody, by the express terms of these standby and subordination agreements, and again, they were not merely subordination agreements, they were standby and subordination agreements, which not only prohibited us from making a payment, but prohibited them from accepting payments.
Yeah, but that's payment. That's not the judgment.
I'm sorry?
That's payment. That's not the judgment. The judgment is payment.
In order to have a judgment, you have to have an underlying finding, I believe, that there's been an event of default under the notes.
All the note seems to prohibit is payment. And getting a judgment just, you know, puts them in line. It doesn't constitute a payment. Right? There's no payment. So what's the violation?
Your Honor, number one, both the Culp cases.
Forget the cases. What is it in the words payment that bars the judgment, or in something that underlies it? Or what's the problem? Why shouldn't they get the judgment? And they're all set to collect, and in, you know, if there's enough money for them after the bank is paid.
Well again,
I thought you were just arguing that the problem was that the judgment's too much because there was an event of default recognized, which allowed acceleration. And in fact, your claim is that you didn't default.
No, that's the most egregious, I believe, Your Honor.
Well, are you making that argument?
I'm making that argument,
okay.
And the other argument, Your Honor, that again under both Culp and Becker,
right.
Your Honor.
No, I know that, but
okay.
What do you do with this word "principal" in these agreements? Without the prior written consent of First Merchants, this happens to be the language on page 7 of your brief. Ontario will not make, and the Craigs won't accept or receive any payments in cash or otherwise on account of the principal of the subordinated claim. That sounds to me like you still had to pay interest.
No, I disagree, Your Honor. It says on account of principal. It says on account of principal.
Yeah.
Any payment that's due, Your Honor, is on account of principal. It doesn't say.
That's a funny way of putting it, though, isn't it?
Well, and it specifically goes on to say that they may make payments of interest. Make payments of interest so long as the bank, they're not in default and the bank consents. In this case, they were in default and the bank did not consent. And I think that's a very clear indication that not only payments of principal, but payments of interest are not allowed to be made.
So you're conceding they were in default?
No, Your Honor. Not in default. Not in default. That's the issue here, I believe.
Okay.
Whether, and that's again what Culp and Becker both held, whether if in fact you have a subordination agreement, subordination and standby agreement, that says under certain circumstances we can't make payments and they can't accept payments, does that constitute an event of default? Just as the court said in, just to quote Becker,
well, you've defaulted against the bank, haven't you?
I'm sorry?
There is a default here.
Oh, we were in default to
right, of course,
we were in default,
default
to
right. Well, it's sort of logic choppy. I mean, the question is, should they be allowed to get a judgment so they can be, you know, in line to collect if and when they're... I don't even see what your interest is. Seems to me,
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear your last.
I don't see why you care. What's your interest?
Well, we do care. The effect of having a judgment entered against your company, Your Honor, is obviously... I know I've lost my time, but may I finish my answer?
Well, obviously you should finish your answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. But the effect of having a judgment entered against you when you are not in default, I think, is improper.
Well, you are in default. You're just playing games with whether you're in default, you know, to... Anyway, thank you. Your time has expired. So, Mr. Merkel?
Yes, good morning. May it please the Court. I'll address the issue of the Trial Rule 60 motion. I think there's an important distinction here that we should focus in on. Judge Posner, under your ruling in Boyko, said that the court at the district court level should determine whether or not it has any inclination to grant the motion. If there is no such inclination, it should deny the motion.
Well, it certainly should have an inclination here. You didn't even allege citizenship in Arizona.
In our full draft,
you know, their tax form they attached to their motion.
The allegations of jurisdiction, although used the word citizenship, was not picked up by the district court. However, in the
look, we've said in countless cases, the question is not the state you're a resident of, the state you're a citizen of. You've never alleged that your clients were citizens of Arizona.
We have asserted.
They put in this motion, you've got no response to it. They put in the motion with the tax form attached to it, you don't have any response to it.
We did, Your Honor. In response to that, we also tendered to the court the tax returns from Arizona as
well,
proof
fine.
Of...
Well, fine, you're paying taxes in Arizona, too. That doesn't matter.
A residency based upon the ownership
residency,
of a home.
Residency, you're wrong again,
and
right?
Citizenship as...
What is the evidence of their Arizona citizenship?
They owned a home in Arizona. It is where Mr. Craig was also employed.
They owned a home in Michigan. I know I'm a citizen of
Michigan.
Michigan.
They had the intent to return to Arizona. That was the whole purpose of their retirement, was to live in Arizona. The reason why they had
that would need an evidentiary hearing, and the district court misunderstood what it was supposed to do. I'm looking at his order, and all he says is it is this court's view that it is without jurisdiction to conduct a hearing or to review new filings while this matter pends on appeal. You argue in your brief that that's a ruling, but it's a statement from the district judge saying that he doesn't believe he can do anything. That's wrong.
I don't think so. I think we have to look exactly at what the Judge McKinney said here.
I am looking at it right now. And he says he doesn't see why Boyko applies because it's habeas. Now, that, I think, fails to take into account a lot of the way Boyko is written. But then he concludes he can't take this up. He can't say yes. He can't say no. That's what no jurisdiction means. You have no power.
What he says is that he has no jurisdiction to conduct a hearing or review new filings.
And
that is what
wrong.
Judge Posner said. I believe reading Boyko, it tells you that he cannot conduct
a
hearing.
It doesn't make any sense, does it? Because there's obviously a very serious issue of whether we have jurisdiction or the district court has jurisdiction. That issue has to be resolved. Now, how do you think it should be resolved?
That absolutely, that there is citizenship in the state of Indiana.
No, that can't be. I mean, really, don't be absurd. There is a real contest as to whether there's jurisdiction here. It's extremely uncertain. I think probably they are citizens of Indiana, but in any event, it's uncertain. So there has to be some method of resolving this dispute. Now, what is the method you suggest?
If the jurisdiction is an issue for this court and the court believes it, it can remand it to the district court for that hearing. Under Brown versus U.S., you can conduct, enter a ruling on the rest of the substantive matters.
No, we can't. Not if we don't have jurisdiction. You cite Brown, but Brown doesn't arise in a situation where there's no competence to hear the case. We can't issue advisory opinions. And if the result of the hearing on remand were to be a finding of fact that they are citizens of Indiana, that's all that we would do. We can't say, oh, and by the way, in case things work out, here's what we think of merits.
Well, then the answer is to remand the case to the district court for an evidentiary hearing.
Which it's, I think is also what your opponents are asking for.
But which I would promote that there is evidence of which Judge McKinney had before him. He had the affidavit on that was tendered.
The Mrs. Craig's voting in Indiana.
Mrs. Craig did vote in Indiana, but she also, that was in 2006.
Tell me she voted in Arizona.
That's what I thought.
She did not vote in Arizona also.
You paused
only
in the threshold area.
How can she vote in Indiana if she's not a citizen of Indiana?
She had, at the time, of the, under the case law, we know that citizenship is determined at the time that the case was filed, in 2005. In 2005, they had all the intentions in the world to remain in Arizona as citizens. Because of the default on these notes, they didn't have the wherewithal to retain those residences in Michigan and Arizona and Indiana, and actually had sold their original home in Indiana to move to Arizona.
And they bought a new one.
And then they bought a new one because Mrs. Craig's mother, who is 91 years old, is still in Indiana and in Illinois.
All those are good reasons for holding that she's an Indiana citizen, but
not at the time of your filing in 2005.
Well, that hasn't been determined, and that's what you two want.
At 05, the intention was to remain citizens of the state of Arizona. And
why did you allege that in your complaint?
It's inartful drafting, Your Honor. Inartful drafting. I had used the wrong phraseology, residents in the complaint, as opposed to citizens.
You continued to do it throughout the case. Your jurisdictional statement in your brief in this court simply asserts that the appellant's jurisdictional statement is correct. The appellant's jurisdictional statement, of course, raises the question whether your clients are citizens of Arizona. You have never actually alleged that your clients are citizens of Arizona.
In our brief, we have.
No, also,
you didn't. I was startled to see that in your brief, since the first half of your opponent's brief contests jurisdiction, and you said they're right.
You know, we had come back and submitted also to the court, I believe, the affidavit, made reference to the affidavit of citizens and residents of the state of Arizona, which was submitted to the district court.
Affidavit says they're citizens of the United States and residents of Arizona. I think you still don't understand what is required for federal jurisdiction.
I do, Your Honor, that they should have said...
But
they are citizens of the state of Arizona.
If you had said that, at least that would have framed the issue. But at this point, your jurisdictional statement on page one of your brief concludes with the line, the Craigs state that the jurisdictional statement in appellant's brief is complete and correct. And so I jotted down in my copy, so no subject matter jurisdiction? Question mark?
Again, an error on my part, Your Honor.
You're afraid to assert that they're citizens of Arizona.
Your Honor, my point is...
You'll put it in writing. You'll just tell us that...
It is. They are citizens of the state of Arizona.
Well, were they in 2005?
In 2005, absolutely. And
so
that
they
issue,
were defrauding the state of Indiana when they, in April 2005, got the homestead tax credit. Is
at
that
the
correct?
Time that they filed that, they were mistaken as to whether or not they were eligible to file the homestead credit exemption.
And indeed, they got it in 2006 and 2007,
in
so it's a long mistake.
At that point in time, because of the financial burden that had been placed on the default of the notes, they had to start retreating and move back to Indiana.
I think you need to tell the district judge all of these things and let
Your Honor, I would point out finally.
So are they no longer citizens of Arizona? Are they
no longer citizens of Arizona?
Indiana.
They're back in Indiana. The jurisdiction and venue statement that was in our complaint sets forth that they are citizens of different states and the amount in controversy is exclusive of $75,000. That was admitted by the...
It doesn't make any difference, of course.
So it was never an issue before the district court, so we never had evidence before the court.
But it doesn't matter. You can't stipulate to subject matter jurisdiction, as I'm sure you remember from law school.
I do, Your Honor.
The judge should have thrown your case out immediately because you didn't allege citizenship.
But we did.
No, you didn't. You did not allege that they're citizens of Arizona.
We said they were. I appreciate that. I was alerting the court to the fact that we had asserted they were citizens of different states in the complaint, and that was never an issue because it was admitted in the answer. the reason why we did not come forth with additional evidence after the case had been put up on appeal is because we never had, there was no evidentiary hearing. To put forth evidence at the time seemed improper because there was nothing to submit evidence for. And that was one of the arguments we made in our brief about what the Ontario had submitted, is it was not supported. It was not evidence, nothing to refute.
They were just asking for a hearing. They presented reasons to have a hearing, at which point, had there been a hearing, it would have been time enough to for you to carry your burden of proof that there is, in fact, jurisdiction. They could have submitted whatever they wanted.
And remand may be the way to deal with that, Your Honors. I would point out, though, on the substantive nature of the subordination agreement itself, as the Court has been asking counsel, it is an issue of payment and not preventing the Craigs from pursuing collection on the notes.
Right, but of course the district court's judgment here doesn't read the way many similar judgments read in the cases you cited. He doesn't say anything in the judgment about that fact. He just issues a judgment, which looks like it can be executed on immediately, whereas in many of the cases you cited, the judge is careful to say something on the order of, you know, this is subordinated to the other interests.
Well, the other interests would certainly assert that at the time of proceeding
supplemental.
Well, if
you tried to collect.
To collect.
Right? It seems
the point is that in paragraph 9 of that agreement, there is a standstill, no collection provision as it relates to collateral. Appreciate the time, Your Honor. I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mercer. So, Mr. Richmond, your time has expired. You can have 1 minute if you'd like. Anything further?
Just briefly, I will address only the subordination issue. Your Honors have obviously addressed the jurisdictional matter. I just want to bring to the Court's attention in terms of the you correctly point out that the judgment that Judge McKinney entered in this case does not provide all the safeguards that some of the other courts found were acceptable under language like we have in this standby and subordination agreement. And I think even more telling is the fact that in addition to that, the Craigs actually commenced collection actions. They filed motion for proceeding supplemental, which is the procedure under Indiana law to collect your judgment. And in addition to that, they named as a garnishee defendant a bank, which if there had been monies in an account at that bank would have been frozen at the time. I mean, you know, Craig cited in their brief that they, oh, it's okay because under, you know, the North Star case that and under the Leadville Corp case, the court made these specific findings that you know, you'd have to go to court before you can enforce the judgment. Well, it's not in their judgment, and more importantly, they acted inconsistently with that. They went to court, filed proceeding supplemental, had us ordered to come to court, produced documents, and named a bank as a garnishee defendant that would have frozen funds had it been in there. And that's inappropriate. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate
Mr. Richmond and Mr. Merkel.